Why do you argue with your data?
Because I'm a teenager and it's my job.
Don't argue. Never argue with me about Danny Elfman. You'll lose.
Yeah, I probably will.
I got stupidly obsessed with Danny Elfman my senior year in high school. It was the year that Nightmare Before Christmas came out. And I already had like the Beetlejuice soundtrack and stuff.
Beetlejuice.
But I never really put together like who Danny Elfman was. Like, I knew his music, I knew the Batman score and stuff like that, and I love like Pee-wee's Big Adventure score, like, but it never really occurred to me it was all the same guy. And then Nightmare Before Christmas came out and I became obsessed with Danny Elfman and Oingo Boingo. And it was a while when I was buying every single Danny Elfman score, even to like the movie like Extreme Measures, like a hospital drama, and like Disney's Flubber, like just because Danny Elfman did the score. So like I was like, I gotta own it. But then like they gradually started like becoming less and less interesting as he just started pumping them out for Hollywood productions. So yeah, when it was announced that he was doing Hellboy 2, I got pretty excited though.
And then you didn't like the movie.
I didn't say I didn't like the movie. I didn't care for the score that much.
You literally told me you didn't care for the movie like 3 days ago.
You know, I have such mixed feelings about Hellboy 2. Like, I go back and forth on it. It's one of those movies that like I like a lot in retrospect. Like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh yeah, this isn't really working for me. But then I look back on it and I'm like, oh yeah, like, there's a lot of cool ideas in it.
I liked it.
Yes. There's a lot of good, like there's, it doesn't mesh for me, but my job here is not to convince you otherwise. Our job is to talk about it, the movie. I was going to say it's our first sequel, but it's our second sequel, but it's our first sequel to a Del Toro film.
Yes.
Yeah. The first.
Almost trilogy.
Sadly, not trilogy. Yeah, it's funny because I was just re-listening to our conversation about Hellboy. And we don't have to cover a lot of that anymore because we already know who these characters are.
So it shouldn't take 10 hours this time.
Oh, thank goodness. It shouldn't take 10 hours, even though I believe this is a longer film than Hellboy. It seems to have less plot. Like, there's like four major sequences.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're just long sequences that kind of like bring it all together. But you, even though you enjoy the film, you agree with me that there's some plot holes.
Oh yeah.
There's like a lot of stuff that,
there's a lot of stuff that was never explained.
Or why did it have to happen this way?
The movie could have been 10 minutes long.
Not to mention the fact that in my mind, Hellboy 2 is kind of a remake of Blade 2, but also it's
like a prequel
to
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Right. It sets up themes that he will expand on in his screenplay and tie-in novel to Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which we will be covering next episode. So I don't want to go into it too much.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I do want to draw. Well, I'll drop a couple little ideas at you, but we'll do an intro.
Okay.
This is pre-show chatter. We're just chattering before we start. Theme song hasn't even played yet, has it?
Under the Sea is our theme song now.
Hey, Ollie.
Yeah.
Push that theme song button. That's where the theme song will play. Welcome back. Oh, wait, that's not how we start the show. Hey, how do we... Usually I just segue into it and then I edit it around it, but this is... like Hellboy 2, the Hellboy 2 episode just sort of hits the ground running. I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And it's
Del Toro time.
Or I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And It's Del Toro time, because that's the actual title of the show, not Del Toro time. The It's is part of the title, and we're talking about
Hellboy 2. I said that really loudly into the microphone.
Hellboy 2, the Golden MacGuffin.
I don't think that's what it's called.
Do you know what a MacGuffin is?
Do I want to?
Yes, you do want to know what a MacGuffin is, because it is a piece of cinema terminology that you'll hear a lot. MacGuffin is, I think it was coined by Alfred Hitchcock. The MacGuffin is the thing that you're after that everyone's like trying to get in a movie that ultimately doesn't matter at all because it's not really what the plot is about.
Yep.
It's just an object that you everyone that's just there to drive the plot forward. But in the end of the day, who cares? And that's kind of what the Golden Army is. Ends up not mattering at all in the...
No. The Golden Army matters. It's the object that doesn't matter.
Well, not even the Golden Army matters. It doesn't do anything. Like, the Golden Army...
There's some cool scenes with the Golden Army.
It looks cool, but the Golden Army could not have been activated. They could never have found it, and the movie would end the same way.
That's true. How did he even... Oh, right, because you have the map.
Yeah. Like, it just becomes this... It becomes this thing that you're after, but then at the end of the day, you're not... Kind of like the map in The Force Awakens.
Or the Elder Wand in Harry Potter.
In Harry Potter, right? It's just this thing, you could have it or not, but it gives the all the characters something to focus on. When in fact the real focus of Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, is the relationship between Nuala and Nuada.
And Abe and...
Yeah, and like the whole thing with like the...
Baby.
The babies.
Babies.
And the relationship of people and...
Like creatures.
The creatures, the mythological world, the two worlds, the human world and the world of fairy, which is where Don't Be Afraid of the Dark comes in, specifically the gold Don't Be Afraid of the Dark tie-in novel written by Christopher Golden, Guillermo del Toro, and illustrated by Troy Nixie, the director of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. We'll get into that next episode heavily, but there's a few ideas from it that I want to talk about because this movie kind of is a little prologue-y to that. Your favorite sequence in the whole movie that was right off the bat.
Which one is my favorite sequence?
The animated sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it starts off with little boy Hellboy.
Yeah.
Little boy
Hellboy. Hell, literal boy.
Boy.
Yes. Hell child. He's like a, how old do you say he is? He's like
11.
Do you know this for a fact?
No.
Well, because it is 11. I'm looking at it right here in the little synopsis. 11. He's 11.
So really?
Very good. Very good. He's dubbed, obviously.
I mean, he has like these weird... I don't know. Are they prosthetic teeth?
They gave him these gigantic prosthetic teeth that he can't even close his mouth around. So at times, he's barely moving his lips, and there's like a phantom voice coming from the speakers. He's like, nang, 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 nang. And it's like, oh, father, what? Tell me another story. And I'm like, what is happening?
Oh, father.
I'm like, just shave those kids' teeth down. Like, when I think, I guess in the comic, the little boy, whenever you see Hellboy as a child, like, he does have these giant front teeth.
Well, maybe he lost his two front teeth before he did the rest of his teeth, so they just look giant.
I don't think that's how it works.
What do you mean?
Wait, what are you talking about?
Like, you know, when you're a kid and you lose teeth.
Yeah, I know you. I know what that means. I know. Why would his teeth be the size of thumbs, though?
Well, maybe demons work differently.
Maybe demons work differently. Maybe they don't need to move their lips properly to talk.
He just does that for the sake of others.
Well, it is Christmas Eve, and he's watching
the most terrifying thing.
Howdy Doody, which is thematically unimportant, I guess. Howdy Doody was a TV show, and there's a puppet, a marionette man named Howdy Doody. And I guess that's important. Like, they focus on it a little bit. But in any case, what does he ask his father, Professor Broom, for?
Father, can you...
can you...
read me a story?
And what does the story that Professor Broom tells him, in a nutshell?
In a nutshell. Well, basically... Once upon a time, humans and fae lived together in peace, but humans were born with a hole in their heart that couldn't be filled by anything. And humans were like, we're going to take this for ourselves, because, well, actually, that's pretty accurate. and so they went to war against the fae, and yes, I am calling it the fae, because that's just what I refer to it as. And the elves were like, no, this isn't going to work. So the king of the elves was like, I need... an army to kill these humans. And a goblin was like, ooh, I'm here. I'll build you an army. So he built the golden army that was controlled by a golden crown. And it didn't have to sleep or eat, and it was indestructible.
You know, 70 times 70.
70 times 70 is a very large number that I don't want to do the math for.
4,900.
So the king's like, great. And he sent the dudes off to fight in the war. And then the humans were like, oh, this isn't going well. And the king was sad, so he made a truce with the humans. But his son was like, no, humans suck, so I'm going to leave and then I'll come back. And the king split the crown into three pieces. One to the humans, one to the elves. Two to the elves?
I don't quite remember. He's split the crown.
Is it three pieces? He has one piece. His daughter has another, and the humans have another.
Yeah, yeah. One piece goes to the humans. The other two, the elves hang on to.
Yeah.
And so, and then what does the crown do?
The crown. I already said that.
You did?
Yeah, I said they're controlled by a golden crown.
Oh.
And once the crown is broken, the golden army is deactivated and locked away to slumber for eternity.
Because the golden army is kind of evil.
They're not evil.
Like they're way too powerful.
They can't be evil because they don't have brains.
But it's like it's implied later on that like as soon as the golden army was created, like the land around them died. Like it was. There's a lot.
Well, I mean, they're probably really hot.
I mean, yes, they're powered by golden magic.
Well, like they look like they're powered by fire.
it's this thing, and when I say like golden, when I refer to them as a MacGuffin, it's they're there and they're a huge deal is made out of them at the beginning. We don't see the Golden Army again until the very end.
Yeah,
and we don't really learn a lot about.
Oh,
them.
I forgot to mention that the king could only control them as long as no one else of royal blood challenged him.
Right. And so he has this son and this daughter who are twins, Nuala and Nuada.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much, so we have this whole prologue with Hellboy getting read a story, and then it shows this whole, it's a cool animated sequence.
I love it.
That illustrates the creation of the Golden Army. The whole story is told like with animation. And then Hellboy goes to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's the intro sequence.
And there's a big intro, like the big title sequence, Hellboy and the Golden Army. And then we have another sequence, mm-hmm. which is an auction house auctioning mm-hmm. off ancient artifacts.
I thought it started with Prince Nuada.
Yeah, so the Prince Nuada is Nuada. In our favorite Guillermo del Toro sewer mm-hmm. by our favorite Guillermo del Toro subway with his friend, Mr. Wink, who's kind of a big
troll.
Is he a troll?
Yeah.
Like a Muppet? He's like a Muppet troll. He's like a real guy. It's like a suit. Like, but it's this big guy with a big metal fist.
And he has porcupine spines on his back. Yep.
And
Prince Nuada?
Nuada.
Nuada is swinging his...
Yeah, you get some blade-esque swordplay.
This is definitely what he was doing.
And this is appropriate because Prince Nuada is played by... Do you remember his name? Luke Goss, who played...
The man with the face.
The man with the face in Blade 2. Luke Goss played Jared Nomak in Blade 2. Main.
I gotta remember that.
The main vampire killer monster. And playing an extremely similar role in this movie as far as pale otherworldly creature who is the son of the leader of those otherworldly creatures who does not like his father goes.
Kills his entire family.
Oh, spoiler alert. But he's swinging his sword around. He's doing all kinds
of... It's not really a sword. It's more of a spear or a knife.
Yeah, I guess it's like a staff with a...
It's small, and then you can make it bigger.
Yeah. It's a retractable staff with a spear on the end.
It's a spear. It's a spear. Not a staff.
Retractable spear. I guess... I would say a spear is a kind of staff. A sharp staff.
Just say a spear.
What is a spear but a pointed staff?
I mean, like a staff, like when you say staff, you assume like magic, like.
I guess I think whoosh. It was a staff because you can staff fight with it. Like, you can fight with it.
You could do that with a spear, too.
Can you?
Yes.
I would think that a spear designed to be just, like if you went to someone and you were like building a spear, they would build you something not fighting appropriate, but with a pointy end. Whereas if you said build me a staff with a spear on the end, then you'd have a fighting pole
or
with a pointy end.
Or just make me a metal spear.
Or... Give me a gun, because it's 2017, and if I wanted to kill something, this pointed staff probably wouldn't be the best way to do it. In any case, they've got these boxes, like he and Mr. Wink have these like cases mm-hmm. that they're going to do something with, we don't know, and then up above their little Ninja Turtle lair, or little adventure zone, is...
An auction house.
An auction house, museum, they're... It's an auction that they're auctioning off like artifact, like massive artifacts, like a
fertility statue
that's like 12 feet tall. Like, and I don't know who's buying all this stuff. I came up with the idea that it's probably other museum owners. Like,
I still think it's rich, annoying.
It could just
people.
Be rich, annoying people. It doesn't matter. We never find out, nor does that have any consequence to the plot, Because who shows up to their... Oh, because what are they auctioning off next?
The piece of the crown.
Yes.
All of these people who this belonged to died years ago. Don't worry about it. Yeah. It's basically what the guy says.
Yeah, it's the human-owned piece of the crown. Again, we don't know where it came from. We don't know how it got there. But Prince Nuada bursts in with his friend, Mr. Wink. What?
Nothing.
And they open up the case and...
First he does this long, drawn-out speech that all villains do.
He opens up the case. Something comes out.
First he puts that thing on the guy's face.
Well, yeah, there's this weird thing where he throws like a blob at the man's face.
It's like
face.
Really face hugger-esque.
Yeah, and it's... But you never find out what it is. It's just this...
I think it's a face hugger.
It's a little face hugger. And then he opens the box, things fly out, and that's the end of the second prologue.
Mm-hmm. And then...
And then we start the movie over again.
In the BPRD.
Then we finally get to the lair of the BPRD. BPRD headquarters, which is far more... I said Men in Blacky than it was. Like, it's a little wackier than it was in the first movie.
And guess who we get to see? We get to see our good friend Doug Jones.
Our good friend Doug Jones. And who do we get to hear?
Doug Jones.
Our good friend Doug Jones. And how does he sound?
Amazing.
He does. It's so nice to hear his voice.
He has such a beautiful voice.
And you said that we noted that Abe looks a little different in this movie.
I was the first one who noticed that.
Yeah, how is he different?
Well, he's definitely more detailed than he was before. He has more, like, fins, like, and is, like, in the, like, the back of the neck, and, like, he has stripes.
Yeah.
He has eyes now.
I think... What do you mean?
Because, like, I think in the first movie his eyes were only black.
Oh, yeah, they're a little more detailed, a little more, they look a little more like an animal, a little more expressive. Mm-hmm. Like, you can tell a little bit more what's going on in his face. I can personally justify it a little bit, because in the comic, he mutates into new forms gradually.
I just think it was because Abe was a bigger character in this one.
And they gave him a little more of a budget. Yeah, I mean, you know. So we meet Abe again, and he's kind of like hanging out with Tom Manning, our friend from the first movie.
Friend.
Who's still ticked off because... So they're still playing up the whole...
We're a secret government organization.
Yeah, but now it's like... Whereas in the first movie, you saw like kind of blurry photos who had been taken of Hellboy. This time it's like he's posing for photos with people. Mm-hmm. Like it's far more blatant. And when I said Men in Black stuff was going on, there's like wacky monsters being hauled through the BPRD that are just sort of in the background. Like,
yep. And Abe and Manning are walking down the hallway together.
Yeah. There's like chatting. A walk and talk sequence. And... There's trouble in paradise between Hellboy.
Was it ever a paradise?
And Selma Blair and Liz Sherman, who are fighting? Hellboy gets thrown through a door or runs through a door?
No, Liz explodes.
Is that what happened? Wait, how could Liz explode? Because is anything burned in their bedroom?
No, but she's still on fire.
I guess. Like, so... You're led to... They imply... Well, they don't imply. They say that they're fighting a lot. Like, there's a lot of tension between Liz and Hellboy.
Yep.
And which I guess makes sense. In the first movie, we established that he had the mentality of, like, a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's, like, in this long-term relationship. Like, of course it's not going to go up. Plus, she's the only woman he's ever known.
Like, literally the only one.
Like, this doesn't... Just because you grow up together doesn't mean you're perfect for each other.
But they do seem to love each other.
They do, but they fight a lot.
So does everybody else.
I guess. But yeah, so they're having all these arguments, and he's like trying to like be like, oh, I'll pick up more, I'll clean up more. And she's like, oh, it's not that. I just need my space.
That sounds very familiar. Like it could be happening in our real life sometimes, Father.
It happens sometimes. And they get a call to go out to the museum where something has happened.
Yeah.
And what has happened?
Well,
did people get killed?
Yeah.
Are there any bodies?
No.
Where is the bodies?
Digested on the floor.
There's just, I guess, poo.
Yep, it was bloody, fairy poo.
Bloody fairy poo on the floor. That they're just like wading through.
They don't know what it is at first.
Yeah, it's just a sticky mess. And everyone's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Who was at this auction? And
Abe looks in some books.
And
they find the boxes first.
Yeah, and they're empty.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so we have Abe and Liz, Hellboy,
an agent and another agent,
and then a couple other agents. Yeah, yeah, just nameless. We don't know who these guys are, and it's a good thing we don't,
because they die horribly.
Something comes out of the walls at them, and it is these cute little
tooth fairies.
They are fairies, but their heads are like just big mouths, basically.
And they have eyes.
Little eyes.
And they have four legs.
Mm-hmm. And wings.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Big chomping teeth. And
they don't have sharp teeth, though.
Yeah, they're like human teeth. Yeah. They look like human mouths, but there are a lot of them, and they feed off of...
calcium.
Yeah, bones and teeth.
And hence the name Tooth Fairy.
Hence the name Tooth Fairy.
Maybe that's what the Tooth Fairy does with teeth.
What?
Eats them.
Well, let me diverge from our conversation momentarily. For a moment, not momentarily. I'm doing it right now. The concept of fairies, tooth fairies that are actually fairies that eat teeth and are malevolent, is brought up in this movie,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't go anywhere. It just sort of introduces you to the fact that, oh, we're dealing with fairies all of a sudden. In the book Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, book and movie, we deal explicitly with creatures that are known as tooth fairies who are from the world of fairy, and they are not like these fairies. They are more like little goblins, but they eat calcium, they eat bones and teeth, and they are known culturally as tooth fairies. The story also deals with a deal made between the world of fairy and human beings,
mm-hmm.
a contract that gets broken. And I see the building blocks for that in the world of Hellboy.
I still think it takes place in the same universe.
Well, there's a lot of shared ideas, and it comes a little bit, starts getting explored in Pan's Labyrinth, up through here.
What if all Del Toro movies take place in the same universe?
That's kind of like in the back of my head. They certainly take place in the same philosophical universe,
mm-hmm.
but it gets mentioned, and I'll talk about this more in the future. But
maybe the Judas bug wasn't actually created by humans. Maybe they were just fairies.
Well, maybe it's just tapped into that mythology, into that magic. Maybe it was influenced somewhat by that. But there's two authors, Arthur Machen and Algernon Blackwood.
Mm-hmm.
Keep those guys in the back of your head, because they are two big influencers on Del Toro's worldview. Algernon Blackwood wrote a book, a story called The Willows, and he also wrote one called The Wendigo.
I love the tales of the Wendigo.
That deal explicitly with human beings exploring nature and falling prey to the vagaries of creatures who are completely beyond our comprehension, but are still part of the natural world. And Arthur Machen dealt a lot with his book. He has a very famous novella called The Great God Pan.
Mm-hmm.
And for Arthur Machen, Pan wasn't the Pan of mythology that we think of as Pan. Pan simply represented the overall hideousness of the natural world. Like, if you could see through the veil into the actual natural world, you would see horrors beyond your comprehension. And that there are things outside our line of vision that we are unaware of, and thank goodness we are unaware of them, because they would drive us nuts. And
ignorance is bliss, my friends.
Ignorance is bliss. And you can see how these two concepts start playing into Del Toro, particularly with Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, oh, it's right yeah. there. Like, that's just...
I mean, oh, heck yeah.
And that's just the crux of it right there. But really, once we start getting into Hellboy 2, there's this notion of the invisible realm that is... If it wasn't for the fact that Nuada is angry at human beings, would remain invisible, but still preying off of us in certain ways.
Like the cats.
Yes. So they are attacked in the museum.
It doesn't look like a museum. It looks small.
Yeah. Well, it's just,
I still think it's an auction house because there's a vault.
One of my criticisms about this movie is that for all the bizarre places it goes, it seems small. Everything seems very set bound. It doesn't feel like an expansive. It doesn't feel like it's in a city,
except for the scene with the rolling hills, where the scene.
Well, when you're actually outside, yeah, then you can be like, wow. And actually, that does, like, you're like, wow, this opened up, but then you're immediately back down. For some reason, Hellboy doesn't feel this way. Pan's Labyrinth doesn't feel this way. It just feels very much like it's on a Hollywood set.
Isn't it?
Well, it is on a Hollywood set, but the other movies manage to not feel that way. They feel bigger, and it's still the same director. It's still Guillermo Navarro, the cinematographer. Like, nothing is different. I just don't know what it is. It feels a lot more like you're watching sort of a big episode of a TV show than a major motion picture. I don't know how to describe it. In any case, they're attacked by tooth fairies. The tooth fairies kill the agents.
Both of them.
By reducing them to...
Well, they eat them.
Yeah, skeletons. Down to their... You see their skeletons.
And then Hellboy looks and the fairies are just devouring the skeleton. Yeah. It's like that scene in Doctor Who with the Vashnarada.
Yes. Everything turns to skeletons. And like Doctor Who, it's remarkably bloodless.
Mm-hmm.
Again, PG-13 movie, not an R movie.
Yeah.
So you're not seeing... You do see one of the tooth fairies attack Abe, and he pulls it off of his arm. It has like a long stretch of skin in its mouth, but it doesn't seem to bother it. Like, again, it's
and
that...
And even like the blood... There is blood in this show, or in this movie, but it's not red blood. It's not yellow blood.
Yeah, and it's not excessive. Like, nothing seems to hurt anyone. Like, in the first movie, when Abe got hurt, Abe got hurt. In this movie, Abe gets bitten, torn... smashed into walls, thrown through windows, and he just sort of shakes it off and keeps going.
Well, I mean, like, that's not as serious as an injury as he had in the first one.
Yeah, but I never felt like any of our main characters were really in danger.
Except for when Hellboy was going to die.
But even then, I was like, this is symbolic. Like, we know this is, he's probably not going to die.
It's literally
Hellboy's probably
Hellboy
not going to die. Not so much in the comic, though. You do never have that guarantee in the comic, since there's so much walking in and out of the afterlife. But
that's like Supernatural.
Yeah. What does death even mean in these worlds?
Nothing.
So they manage to capture one of the tooth fairies.
The tooth fairies all die.
Not all of them.
No, they're all dead.
Oh, that's right. Well, they managed to capture one of the bodies. There's this whole thing going on, too, with, like, the public is kind of turning against the BPRD. Hellboy reveals himself to the public by falling out of the window. Liz blows up and
kills all the tooth fairies,
except for a couple who get blown out of the window with Hellboy. Everyone in the city sees Hellboy, and they're all kind of like, what's the, like...
And then there's two fairies, and he shoots into the crowd and manages to not kill anybody.
Yeah.
Imagine if that was his first, like, thing, just shooting somebody in the face.
Well, he shoots. Yeah, he shoots direct. Like, the two fairies are flying at two people, and he shoots them out of the air. But they're flying away from Hellboy towards people. He shoots them, and the bullet doesn't continue on into the faces of the crowd. Like, it's just, it doesn't make physical sense. But whatever. Like, it's...
Movie
The
magic.
Movie is kind of... The movie is very much of like a big cartoon at this point. Like, it's very cartoony in the action and its violence, which isn't, I usually don't use that as a criticism, but the stakes feel lower. I feel like there's just not as much.
There's not nearly as much tension as there was in the first
one. Yeah, yeah. Again, you like the movie very much.
I do. I enjoy the universe that it's set in.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a big thing for me. Like, I don't criticize movies a lot unless they're awful.
Right.
But, like, as long as the world is decent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Hellboy 2 is an awful movie. It just, the pieces don't fit together for me very well.
There's a lot of plot holes.
Well, I don't care what's happening to the main characters. I'm really concerned about what's happening to our enemies, our antagonists, and the mysterious Nuala, who we haven't even talked about yet. So they get back to BPRD headquarters. They have one of these dead fairies. And...
A new man is here.
A new man.
A new man.
Because...
A new German man.
They have a new, basically, head of the BPRD, because Hellboy's been exposed. The upper people in the upper echelons don't think that Manning can handle it anymore. So they send in a guy from, like, basically the BPRD's German office. And it's a guy named...
I don't remember.
Johann Kraus. And what is special about Johann Kraus?
He's a ghost.
He is a ghost man.
Who is in his little spacesuit.
Yes. Johann Kraus is taken from the comic. We were all very excited. Comic fans were very excited when it was announced that Kraus would be in the movie, because he's a favorite character from the comics. He is a medium. This has not gone into in the movie at all. He's a medium who was having an out-of-body experience when a giant psychic event occurred.
Killed
anyone who was connected to the other plane except for him, because he was out of his body at the time. So when he tried to return to his body, the body was dead.
Yes. It wasn't just dead, it was gone.
Well, it was incinerated.
Yeah.
And he was sort of like trapped for a while, like in the, like he didn't know what to do until he was found by the BPRD. They took him in, they trained him as an agent.
Gave him a suit.
They gave him a special containment suit so he can kind of function in the real world, even though he has no face. He's just like this empty bubble. But he's not like the head of anything in the comics. He rises in the ranks as it goes along, but originally he's just another agent.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, he is the boss. And
he's the boss.
He is played by everyone's favorite actor and writer and TV producer, Seth MacFarlane of Family Guy. Gotta love that Family Guy.
I was so worried you were going to ask me to name the person.
Gotta love that Family Guy humor and American Dad.
I hate both of those
shows. The Cleveland Show. TV, the movie Ted 2, the movie Sing. He was the mouse in Sing. He has a beautiful singing voice. Seth MacFarlane. Yeah, he has a lot of detractors, but he can do voiceover work. He can do a lot of voices. There was originally another actor cast as the voice of Johann Kraus, an actual German actor, as a matter of fact, and they were just like, this is not working. It's just not working. So at the last minute, they brought in Seth MacFarlane because what does it say? It says that the reason given was that the original actor's voice didn't mesh well with the mechanical sound of the suit. I don't know what that means. I'm not going to dig into that any further.
Wait. He's not speaking with the suit. He's just speaking like a person.
Yeah, I guess it just... I'm going to maybe guess that maybe his voice, he was too hard to understand. Like maybe a real German accent just didn't fly. So they brought in like Seth MacFarlane to do his like cartoon German accent. In any case, Johann is portrayed as German, which means that he's a stickler for rules. He's got a real stick up his bum.
And nobody likes him because
nobody likes him.
They just fought a bunch of Nazis.
Especially Hellboy does not like him because he does not like following the rules. But one thing that Johann Kraus can do is he can fly. He's ectoplasmic, so he can fly into a dead body and kind of restore it to life long enough to like get information out of it, which they do with the Tooth Fairy.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells them
that Hellboy's a jerk.
It tells them that Hellboy's a jerk?
Yeah, that's the first thing it says.
Oh, I guess. yeah, it kind of does. But he gets some impressions from it, and they figure out that the fairies were purchased at a...
Troll City.
Troll Market.
Troll City. Troll City.
So they were like, wait.
Kind of like the first episode of Troll Hunters. There's a troll market there. And it's very cool, and I like it a lot.
The troll. We'll be touching on Troll Hunters.
We'll be touching on Troll Hunters.
We'll be touching on the trolls later on. But yes, this is a troll market. And nobody knows what the troll market is. They've always thought there was one in New York City, but where's the troll market?
Under a bridge.
They're like, we think it's under this bridge, but no one's ever been able to find it. And they're like,
not with me. You haven't looked.
Yep. Johann Kraus is like, I can do it because I'm a ghostman. And they also have magic goggles. They have these magic goggles that were invented by a man. They go into the history of these magic goggles.
Basically, trolls class glamour, which is a magic that is used actually quite a lot
in
fairy tales and stuff. That portrays them as just people.
Yeah. And these goggles are made with certain stones that help you see...
through the glamour.
Yeah. They've never been used before. I guess no one ever thought, let's put on these helmets, just walk around a little bit. Maybe we can figure out more about the world in which we live. They throw them on. They find a Fragglewump? Fragglewump? Fragglewampus? Fraggle... I've got it here in my notes.
Hippopotamus?
A Fragglewump, yes. Which is a troll that is disguised as a
female old woman.
Yeah, an old lady who eats
cats.
Yes.
And is afraid of canaries.
Yes, for whatever reason, it's funny. And they corner her and threaten her.
We forgot the scene where Hellboy didn't listen to Kraus.
Which scene where Hellboy didn't listen
to Kraus? The first one where they're like hiding behind the dumpster and Hellboy gets all scared because she's about to eat the cat.
Oh, well, yes. And he jumps out and says,
hey.
He says, Lucy, I'm home, which just like in the TV show I Love Lucy, it's a joke. And they threaten her with the canary, and she shows them the entrance to
the cave cam.
Yeah, it's not
the cave cam.
Not the troll. Cam. Well, they find the entrance to like an underground like passage, which leads to the troll market door.
Yeah, which is for some reason, I don't know why. It's a troll market. Like, you'd think they would want it to be available to, like, the troll public.
Who's the troll public?
Well, obviously, oh, I guess like the her, human yeah. world.
I assume it, well, it's locked. It has like the special lock.
Yeah.
And do you think like all the troll, like maybe they're given like the combination?
Do they like how would the trolls remember the combination? It looks so complicated.
Yeah. They see with their goggles that this like lock is like super complicated. And Johann Kraus goes into it as a ghost.
And he acts all like pompous, like, why didn't you guys do why do you guys keep trying to do this? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, sorry that we're not all incorporeal creatures that can travel and control things.
Right. We've never had anyone like you. You're the first ever ghost
on our team. Stop yelling at us.
So the door opens up and he opens up with ghost power, not before Hellboy punches the old lady across the room.
Yep.
Which I'm like, it's still a troll. Like, it's still an animal. Like, you just hit this thing as hard as it could and it flew across the room. Like, I think you may have killed, you never see it again. Like, I think you may have simply just killed a person.
I think he saved the cats. That's all that matters.
He saved the cats, but there's this like, sort of, they're trying to set up this thing where it's like, humans don't appreciate you. Here's a bunch of otherworldly creatures. Don't you think you could relate to these? But they never really follow through with that. Plus, Hellboy's just immediately antagonistic to every monster he sees.
Just immediately antagonistic to anybody he sees.
So there's not any like chance to be like, maybe you'll fit in here. No, because he just starts, he punches things to death. Like, he just punches everything to death.
He does a hit.
Don't do a hit on the trolls. So anyway, they go into Fraggle Rock, which is basically where they are. They're dancing their cares away in the Star Wars cantina, I guess.
Or in that one Doctor Who episode with Amy Pond.
Right. Or that one Doctor Who episode with Rose Tyler, where they go to the end of the world. Where they're just... You remember the end of the world with... I think it's the second of the new Who? Yeah. Where it's like...
What could scar Rose Tyler the most, thinks the Doctor? Let's bring her to the world to watch her entire planet be destroyed.
And surround her by goblins.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So that's basically what happens here. We enter this underground marketplace, mm-hmm. which is filled with goblins and creatures.
Fairies.
And all kinds of monstrosities.
Fairies.
And they are obviously all like these wonderful Guillermo del Toro creations. Like
Tumor Baby.
They stepped right out of his sketchbook. Yep. They literally did. They stepped right out of Del Toro's sketchbook into the background because we don't get to see a whole lot of them up close. It reminds me of there's a movie called Nightbreed, mm-hmm. Clive Barker movie, and it's about people who are monsters who are forced underground, and you think they're the bad guys in the beginning, and then you meet this like whole world of monsters underground. And I remember when I came out when I was in junior high, and one of my friends had a little bit of publicity, like a publicity thing that folded out that had all the monsters on it, their names, a little bit of backstory on each one. I remember huddling around it in junior high because there were some amazing looking creatures. And then I finally saw Nightbreed, and you maybe see each one for like 5 seconds. Like, they sort of flash by all of them and you focus on like one or two. And I was like, but there are all these great monsters. I want to know more about these monsters. They're far more interesting than this guy who the movie's actually about. And that's kind of what happens to me with the troll market. I'm like, what? No, go back to these crazy monsters. There's so many of them. You built all these wonderful puppets and costumes. And now I'm just like, wait, what? Huh? What? Wait, huh? Like, where's? No, wait, come back. I don't want to see more punching. I want to see like...
I want to see the monsters.
Show more monsters. We do get to see Hellboy punch a man repeatedly in like a Three Stooges-esque like boom, 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 like punch. Why are they in the troll market? What are they looking for?
They're looking for the princess.
The princess? Or are they trying to figure out...
They're trying to figure out who bought the fairies.
Who bought the fairies. The princess is there, though. Princess Nuala, as you said, in full jasmine regalia.
Yep.
She's all jasmined up.
Okay. We should probably explain what that means. Yeah. So in like one of the... Aladdin.
Yeah, Aladdin.
One of my least favorite Disney movies.
Wah, wah.
Because it's racist. it is!
Oh, okay. I'm not arguing with you.
Princess Jasmine is, like, escaping from the castle, and she's, like, full, like, peasant clothes, even though they don't look like peasant clothes. But basically, and she, like, basically Princess Nuala is dressed up in the same way.
Yeah, in a big flowy robe with her face covered.
Mm-hmm.
But who catches her eye, or who does she catch the eye of?
Abe.
Abe Sapien sees this woman.
And sees the crest of the royal.
And he's like, gotta follow her. So now we've split our team. Now Hellboy is going after whoever bought the fairies. And Abe is going after this woman, this princess. Yeah.
And Krauss was first asking around, like, politely.
Mm-hmm.
And then they switched to Hellboy tactics,
which involves a lot of slapping.
Can we talk about Tumor Baby?
Okay, so yes. He's...
There's two and a half creatures that Krauss goes up to and is like, hey, tell me who bought these. And they're like, no. And he's like, please. And they're like, no. And Hellboy's like, are you sure? And the guy's like, and one of the guys is like, yeah, we're sure. And then he punches him across the troll market. Because that's what Hellboy does.
Because the second time he's done this in the movie.
Immediately punching trolls.
Yes.
And so then he starts slapping this one guy who has this thing on his chest that looks like a baby. And the guy eventually gives up and the baby's all sassy towards it. And Krauss goes, thank you for your help. And like, what a good baby or something like that. And the baby goes, I'm not a baby, I'm a tumor.
He's
and like
a tumor.
And curls up on the guy's chest.
It's similar to, in the movie Total Recall, there is a character named Quato, who is one of the leaders of the resistance, but he's actually growing out of a man's chest. So it's similar. He had a little Quato creature. So that's two people Hellboy has punched across a city block.
Oh, and don't worry, there will be more.
There will be more. So Abe is chasing or following Nuala, who goes into a shop where she reveals that she's the princess and the shop owner who has a castle for a head.
I want to know how that creature evolved.
The castle head man?
Yes.
So I always wonder about the fairy, like some of them are obviously like creatures, like the tooth fairies, like they eat calcium. They are animals that just can fly and they sort of live.
They can speak.
They're from a magical realm. But then there's people like Castlehead, who I'm like, did you spring forward from someone's imagination? Is there like a village of Castleheads? Like,
are you from a castle? Like,
right? Are you?
Did you grow out of like? Was there like a stone castle like set or something that like got infested by fairies and you grew out of it?
Right. When you die, is your skeleton a castle head? Like, is this, or are you just all magic? Like, who knows? But he sees her and he's like, oh, I know, there's something here for you. And he gives her this cylinder that contains a map to
the Golden Army.
To the Golden Army. But then Abe shows up and they touch hands.
Yeah, and it's very cute.
Yeah, because she's psychic and he's psychic. And they have a meet cute.
And then Big Troll Man shows up.
Mr. Wink shows up and beats Abe, not to death.
No. He barely touches Abe because Abe is fast.
No, but you see him through the window slamming Abe against the wall, and then he throws him through the window.
Maybe he wasn't slamming that hard because Abe's obviously fine after all of that.
Well, that's what I keep saying, is everyone's always fine in this movie. Like, nothing affects anyone. But yeah, Abe comes out, Hellboy's there, they've gotten the information about who bought the fairies, which I guess, did they need it? Because Abe found this information already, and then Mr. Wink just comes out swinging. There's an extended...
And then Hellboy shoots Mr. Wink.
He doesn't shoot Mr. Wink.
No, he pulls his gun out and shoots at him.
He shoots at him, but then they have a fist fight.
Yeah.
It goes a good
Why didn't Hellboy just use a gun?
Just long fist fight, and...
It ends... With,
so Mr. Wink has a metal hand
that he can shoot,
a giant metal fist. It's kind of like the equivalent of Hellboy's big stone fist,
except for it's weaker because Hellboy crushes it.
It's on a chain and it shoots out and then he retracts it back. And they point out in something and stuff I read that Mike Mignola's Hellboy comic, there's several characters who have fists like this.
It'd be pretty cool if fists like that.
He shoots at, there's a long fight sequence between the two of them. They're just beating the snot out of
each
other.
It took a long, we watched this on like really fast forward.
We did our quick review before the episode.
It took a long
time to get through
it.
Even like on super fast speed, this is a long fight. He shoots his fist at Hellboy. Hellboy punches it in midair with his stone fist and it breaks.
No, the hand doesn't break.
Well, it like gets all like crumply.
Yeah. And then Hellboy starts talking.
Yeah, taunting him.
Yeah. And then he fires his fist again. Hellboy moves out of the way and he gets pulled into a
crushing roller wall, a spiky roller wall. So when you first enter, the first thing you see, you enter the troll market, and to your right as you enter is this roller.
It could be a trash disposal.
It could be a trash dispenser, but it's this wall.
Yes, a trash dispenser, because everybody wants to dispense trash to people.
It's just these two rollers with giant spikes on them that just crush constantly, but you don't see anyone use it. It's just there. It's like,
maybe it's just aesthetic.
It's just an aesthetic, right? Don't get too close to the crushing wall, children. Well, he shoots his fist, he gets grabbed by the crushing wall, pulls him in, and...
You would think that, like, the metal, because, like, the metal was dented by a stone hand. The metal wouldn't be that strong. Like, the chain would break.
Yeah, yeah. instead, it, like, sucks him in, and that's another dead. Like, this is a guy. Like, so now Hellboy's, like,
killed three people. Three innocent people.
Mr. Wink's no, like, angel, but he was a guy. Like, there seems to be no order, like, law and order in the troll market.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, hey, that guy just killed that guy. There's not even a moment, like, a Star Wars moment after Han Solo kills Greedo, where, like, sorry about the mess. Like, there's none of that. Like, where people, like, look up, like, word gets back to Prince Nuada, though, that Mr. Wink got killed by these.
And he's sad. He does have a heart.
Yeah, but these two-headed things go down and tell him. And meanwhile, Nuada's putting together a little bit of clockworkery. Del Toro. He's building a clockwork egg. We don't know what for yet, though.
No.
And as Hellboy and crew exit the troll market into the streets of Manhattan, Nuada shows up. And what does he have?
A magic bean.
Yep. And what is that magic bean in?
The egg.
The clockwork egg.
Why did he make the clockwork egg?
He made a whole clockwork egg in one scene just to open it up in the next scene and take out a magic bean.
Could have just, you know, held the magic bean.
In his pocket.
Or, like, brought a cup of water and, like, not thrown it across the...
Right. So he throws the magic bean. It bounces down the street while every one of our heroes
just stares at it. And, like, Nuala's like, you gotta get it.
Yeah, she's like, no, 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 don't let it go. And they're like, huh, it's just a jumping bean. Like, Hellboy's like, it's just a dumb old bean. And I'm like, what are you doing? You're literally in a magical...
And Abe finally goes after it.
She's, well, because she's like, don't let it hit water. And they're like, oh, it's going towards that grate. And then they're like, oh, better go catch it. I'm like, what even is happening? Why are our heroes just standing in the middle of the... Like, oh, I guess he just threw a bean. No reason. So Abe jumps after the bean. Does he catch it?
No.
No, he does not. The bean goes down into the sewer grate where it becomes... It lands in...
Lava.
Water. Goes down to lava land.
And no, nothing happens.
No, it lands, of course, in water, and there's, like, a tense moment.
Where nothing happens.
They are in a weird part of the city that's only, like, one city. It's, like, a weird, like, intersection. Then
boom!
Boom. The intersection starts blowing up. Something comes up out from under the street, and it is...
A beautiful, beautiful, beautiful creature.
A beautiful creature. It is a elemental, a nature
oh,
elemental.
Oh, and we should mention that it was commanded to kill.
Right.
And I don't think it would have tried to had it not been commanded.
Right. So here we have a very famous sequence from Hellboy 2, which is the elemental sequence, like a forest elemental. Like it's a giant vine monster with like a head that's kind of like a rose, like a flower bud.
And it's beautiful.
And it's angry and it's trying to kill and it starts like smashing everything around it. And then we get this weird sequence where Hellboy, a woman's baby, is trapped in her truck.
She could have just opened the door.
She couldn't open the door.
Why?
Because Hellboy had to open the door. Everyone runs away except Hellboy. So he has to rescue the baby. He grabs the baby out of the back of the truck. He rips the door off.
Mm-hmm.
He could have ripped the door off and handed the baby to someone standing there.
Or handed it to her when she was like, hey, can you get my baby?
Yeah, he could have been like, hold on, I'll get your baby. Everyone runs off. So he has his baby. He's running with the baby. But it's not a baby. It's a rag with a fake baby in it. Because he's not holding it like you would hold a baby.
He's also not holding it in his hands.
Well, he goes back and forth. First it's in his hands, then he's holding it with his tail. In any situation, this baby's not happy.
No.
This baby's getting flopped all around. But the monster's still attacking. So Hellboy has to climb a building.
Just go into the crowd of people and be like, take this baby, while I go fight this thing.
Because, and I talked about this while we were watching it, the monster is so awesome. This is a beautiful creation.
Yes.
But the whole time, I'm watching this baby, this fake baby, because I'm like, well, you've given this other... It could have just been a fight between Hellboy and the monster.
But no, you had to add a baby.
Well, because what they think they were doing is they're ramping up the kitten rescue from the first movie.
Yeah.
Which was cute.
It was cute, and it was like, oh, this is a quick scene with cats, because he really likes cats.
Right, plus... We had already seen Samael before. He was fighting a monster we were already familiar with, so we didn't need to focus on
just the monster.
Right.
But we've never seen this monster
this
before.
Is a new monster, and it's beautiful, and it's awesome, and instead...
And it's not even really a monster.
And he's not just rescuing the baby, he's doing baby tricks. Because he throws the baby whip in the air at one point so he can pull out his gun? I don't understand what is happening in the scene.
And he catches it.
And he catches it, but the baby's like, goo. And I'm like, no, don't do baby gags. There's a sense of humor running through this whole movie that I guess it works for a lot of people. It doesn't work for me. It's a little goofy. And I'm fine with goofy comedies. But,
I'm not.
But it plays weird, especially since they're trying to do something heavy. So he's up on top of a building. Prince Nuada is suddenly up there, and he's like, Look at what
humans are doing, like blah, 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 blah. This is the last of its kind. Do you really want to kill it?
Yeah. And
Krauss is like, kill it.
Yeah, because Krauss is still the boss. So he's like, kill the thing. And Nuada's like, these people don't like you. And it's true. Like everyone, like all the people Hellboy keeps running into are like throwing things at him and saying he's ugly. And Hellboy has to make a choice, which is,
do I kill the thing or do I let it live?
Right. And what does he choose?
He chooses to kill it.
But I should mention, by the way, that he has a new gun in this movie.
It's a baby.
It's called the Big Baby. And I think the only reason it's called the Big Baby is so that in the scene where he's holding an actual baby, he can say, you woke the baby, and then pull out the Big Baby. And then he shoots the monster in the face, in its beautiful face, which explodes. And the whole soundstage becomes a forest. Everywhere its blood flows, plants grow.
But we should mention the face splitting.
Right. What did you point out?
Well, when the creature dies, its face splits open into four sections like a flower, which is something Del Toro likes to do. Not the flower part, right, but the face splitting part.
He loves a split open face. So this is your face that opens a weird way. I know I'm being a little sarcastic about this. It is actually, there's a lot of cool stuff happening in this mm-hmm. sequence. And the monster is
beautiful,
and its death is tragic.
That was like, I almost cried when I first saw that part.
Yeah, it's a moving moment when the thing dies, but its body creates new life.
How do they clean up?
We don't ever talk about it again. This is another one of the parts of Hellboy 2 where it's like, I guess people just saw this monster thing, but we're just going to keep moving on with our story. We got to keep moving on with the story. Hellboy gets in a lot of trouble for this.
Well, like he goes and the woman comes up. She's like, what did you do to my baby?
Yeah. Yeah. Like he gives the baby back to the mom, but people are like, this guy's a monster.
Sorry for saving your life.
Yeah. So,
you asked me to save your child, lady. What are you doing? Liz walks up to him and people are like, no, stay away. He's a monster. And then she bursts into flames.
Yes. We know at this point, by the way, that Liz is pregnant.
Yes.
Abe knows. Abe knows because he's psychic. Mm-hmm. She hasn't told Hellboy, though.
She's taking about 600 pregnancy tests.
Yeah, she keeps taking pregnancy tests. She keeps almost kind of telling him, but she doesn't. It's similar in a reverse way to the moments in Mimic, where the husband knows the wife is pregnant, but the wife doesn't and never tells her until the end. I don't know why they're setting it up this way. I don't know if maybe you're like wondering, like maybe Liz is considering not keeping the baby. That was not a baby. That was the cat.
Yes, we're doing a podcast right now.
Cat was not happy. So I don't know why they're doing this. I think it's maybe she's just like, she has to make sure that he's like worthy of being a parent.
Yeah.
Again, another thing that's a little muddy in this movie. Anyway, so everyone's back at BPRD headquarters.
Krauss doesn't want to bring Nuala with them.
Yeah.
But Abe is like, no.
She's coming. We're keeping her safe. Abe is obviously in love with Nuala. Hellboy is mad at Krauss. They get into a fight. He punches Krauss's face mask, which breaks. Krauss leaks out of his suit and beats up Hellboy with a bunch of locker doors in a very funny sequence. It's an amusing sequence. Yeah. And then saunters off. Walking like Randy. And Hellboy gets drunk. And then he finds Abe.
And Abe gets drunk. And they sing.
They sing a song. I mean, the music plays. There's like romantic music playing. But meanwhile, Nuada, the bad guy, has tracked his sister to be PRD headquarters.
Because they're twins, and that's how twins work.
That's how twins work. That's biologically sound. We've learned by this point that if something happens to either of them, it happens to the other one of them. Mm-hmm. So if one of them gets hurt, the other person gets hurt.
Yeah.
So they have a psychic. They do have a psychic link.
Which might be just elf twins.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, it's not people twins. They do not.
Don't know. We've never seen people twins in the Hellboy universe.
I thought you were gonna say we've never seen people twins. I was like, I actually have seen some people twins.
So have I.
So he's tracked her to BPRD headquarters. He's killed the guards, not killed the dogs.
No.
As you pointed out.
He actually was really nice to the dogs. He pet them.
He petted the dogs.
He's redeemed of all sins.
He gets into BPRD headquarters. We find out that Nuala has part of the crown that he's after. You need all three parts of the crown to power the Hellboy. The Hell Army, the Golden Army, whatever it's called.
She throws the map in the fire.
Right. So she has this tube that she got from the castle-headed guy. It has a map in it, but it's blank. It doesn't actually show you, like, the map is useless.
There's no coordinates.
So she throws the canister into the fire. Hides part of that her part of the crown in a book of poetry
that she was reading to Abe.
Right, cuz they're having a little romantic moment. And Nuada comes in, finds the canister, which is in the fire, and is like, it wasn't the map inside that was the map. And he rolls the canister on the table.
Just use a paper map.
And the canister on the table rolls, and like where it was burning, it burns the map. And like the canister was the map, not the thing inside it. It was a switcheroo. And
you would think that would be pointless, because after heating it up enough times, the map wouldn't be a map anymore.
I don't know. It works that way as magic. And but he can't find the third piece of the crown.
He is like reading her mind, and he goes, oh, blue, you always look so pretty in blue.
Yeah. Our drunk heroes show up, a fight ensues, but you can't beat up Prince Nuada, because if you hurt Prince Nuada,
you hurt Princess Nuala.
You hurt Princess Nuala. So it's this weird, like, one-sided fight. It's just all defense.
Oh, and we forgot to mention the fight between King and Nuada.
King?
The king. The elven king.
Oh, yeah. Like, way early on in the movie, Nuada killed the elven king.
Yeah. But first, you first find out that, what happens to the prince happens to the princess, because he gets sentenced to death, and he goes, are you okay with this verdict, sister?
Yeah. Yeah, the king was going to have Nuada put to death, which would also kill Nuala, but he fights the army, and like the king's army, and kills the king, who turns to stone. And that's how he gets the elf part of the crown.
Yeah.
We forgot to mention that. There's a lot of other stuff going on. So now he's fighting Hellboy. It doesn't go anywhere.
He gets the princess.
Yep. But before he does that, he takes his magic
spear,
Mr. Boy under the boob.
This is a kid-friendly show, father.
Rest. The boob rest.
He
stabs him
in the ribs.
Under the ribs, yeah. In a very similar way that his character in Blade 2 stabbed himself. He stabs him right there, breaks off the spear in his chest, and then he flees. So the idea is that you can't take this spear point out, because if you try to,
it'll just go deeper.
It goes deeper and deeper and deeper until it gets to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So the only person who can remove it,
we don't know yet.
We don't know. But they have to figure out a way to get this thing out of Hellboy. They have to find Princess Nuala.
And also not give him the crown.
And stop the Golden Army. This is where things get very muddy. So our goals now are to keep the Golden Army from waking up.
Mm-hmm. Find the missing piece of the crown.
Kind of. Because what we find out is that Abe finds the missing piece of the crown.
Yeah.
He finds it in the book, but he doesn't tell anyone about it. And get the spear piece out of Hellboy before it kills him. Which means going to
New Zealand.
Nope. Which means going to Ireland.
Yeah. I was close.
They go to Ireland. They go there. Somehow find...
No, they take the private jet, remember?
No, but they go there, they find the goblin who built the Golden Army. Just run into him.
No, they have a copy of the map.
Oh, that's right. They have that map. The goblin who built the Golden Army is just hanging around there, though.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I know who can help your friend, but you have to give me the piece of the spear once it's there.
Oh, and Kraus is now on their side.
Oh, yeah. Kraus helps them escape. There's this whole thing where they steal a plane and Kraus helps them steal the plane. It just happens. Like, Kraus is like, oh, I side with the monsters. I'm more of a monster than a person, but I have all my humanity. Yada, yada, yada.
We never find out his backstory.
Yeah, we never find out. He's like, one day I'll tell you my backstory. We never find out his backstory. The goblin takes them into an underground lair.
It's not a lair, it's a city.
It's a city.
And it's an old troll city.
And it's where the Golden Army was built.
Yeah.
But after the Golden Army was built,
everything died.
And within the city is the only person who can help Hellboy.
The beautiful lady of death.
The angel of death, which is not beautiful.
She is beautiful.
It has a skull mouth.
But she's beautiful. Like,
well, it's a beautiful design. It's mm-hmm. straight out of Pan's Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm. Definitely Doug Jones playing this character.
Giant wings with eyes on them. Again, eyes in the wrong place. No eyes on face.
Actually, we don't know if she has eyes on her face. We never see her face.
Hands that do Doug Jonesy movements.
Who else was played by Doug Jones in this movie besides Abe?
There was like a chamberlain, like the king's. The king of the elves had like a chamberlain who I believe was played by Doug Jones because of the way he moved his hands around. Ernie talked like this. All the elves talk in Gaelic when they're not talking in English. So they talk. So he goes into the thing. They meet this beautiful angel of death who hints that there's some Hellboy-related stuff coming up.
Like, hey, are you sure you want to save this guy? He's the bringer of the apocalypse.
yeah, he's like, you want to save this guy?
You'll be hurt more than anyone.
Right, right. You can just let Hellboy die and nothing bad will happen. But, of course,
Liz loves him, so she's not going to let him die.
So he takes the spear point out.
And she goes, you have to give him a reason to live.
Right, because Hellboy doesn't just wake up. And so what does she say?
You're going to be dead.
And what does he say?
I become father,
which is the most awkward line ever written for a human being to have to say in a movie. I become father. I'm like, I guess that's how it works. If you want to say it that way, sure, sir.
But the angel disappears and the spear is the only thing left and the goblin bites it.
Literally bites the spear point. The goblin doesn't die. Like the way you said, it sounds like the goblin died. The goblin doesn't bite it. He bites the spear.
We don't know if he bites it because we never see him again.
We never see him again. He goes out. He has no legs. They were burned off when the Golden Army was created.
He's attached to a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, he's Porgy and Bessing his way around. He's on a cart. Literally like Porgy from Porgy and Bess. From the stage production, not the actual story. Heard. In the story, he's pulled by a donkey. On stage, he has no legs and he's pushes himself around on a cart, just like the goblin from this. No other relation to Porgy and Bess does this movie have. Yada, yada, yada. Hellboy is awake. They go and they find the Golden Army.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's again where the story gets weird. Hellboy is now alive. They don't need to save him anymore.
No.
Princess Nuala is a prisoner, but we know that Prince Nuada won't hurt her because
it would hurt him.
Right. She's safe. The only thing that can wake up the Golden Army is
the piece of the crown,
which is possessed by
Abe,
who is with
Hellboy.
Right. Abe has this piece of the crown. All they have to do is
not give it to him.
And we know that they can destroy the crown because Liz is a powerful fire person.
Uh-huh. It's literally made out of gold. Gold is the worst metal to make anything out of.
Right now, they could just destroy their crown piece. Movie's done. Like, there's no reason to
Abe wait. And the princess live forever
happily ever after. I mean, I guess Nuada can be a danger to them, but we know that anything that happens to Nuala happens to Nuada. So Nuala could take sleeping pills and go to sleep. Like, just enough sleeping pills to go to sleep. And
or
Nuada
just, like,
would go to
knock
sleep.
Herself out.
Or knock herself out. Threaten to hurt herself. Nuada obviously wants to live.
Yes.
So we're in this weird story-wise, there's no real stakes unless our heroes do something stupid for no reason.
Which they do.
Which is
give the crown piece to Nuada.
Abe is like, hey, I've got this crown piece here. And he gives it to the bad guy.
For no reason.
There's no danger to anyone. And Nuada is like, great, I have the crown. He puts it on. The Golden Army wakes up. It's kind of cool. It's like a bunch of TikToks from Return to Oz. They all wake up. They're all these big round mans. And there's 4,900 of them.
And they have to kill every single one.
Right.
So except they can't because they're indestructible.
Right. But a cool battle ensues. There's a neat fight.
My favorite part is when Krauss takes over the machine.
Right. So Hellboy is trashing robots.
Krauss doesn't fight in this scene. Neither does Liz.
Yeah, Abe and Liv just hang back. Krauss leaves his containment suit and enters one of the robot bodies and uses it to smash up other robots.
This peeves me so much because they're made of gold. Gold is so soft, it would just...
And when he starts the Golden Army, the whole floor is made of giant mechanical clockwork.
For no reason.
It just starts up. Starts moving around, which wakes up the Golden Army. And it keeps moving around, all this clockwork. Mm-hmm. So they smash a bunch of robots. They're pretty tired. But then the robots put themselves back together. Again, it's an indestructible army. Mm-hmm. That is said at the beginning. The army is indestructible.
And we were thinking, when the battle started, we were like, oh, maybe just indestructible because humans didn't have, the technology or whatever. They put themselves back together.
It's a nice fake out. You're like, oh, I guess they really can't be destroyed. Like, they will rebuild themselves perfectly. There's still
4,900 of them.
There's 4,900 of them.
Which, if you think about it, isn't exactly a lot for an entire army.
I guess it's a lot for an army. It's kind of like the Daleks. The Daleks, there's only a few of them at any given moment, but...
Except for that one episode where there's, thousands.
But you have 4,900 of them, and you can't kill them. Like, they'll just keep killing and killing until there's nothing
That's
left.
That's true.
So, there's a switcheroo, though, done on Prince Nuada, mm-hmm. because Hellboy challenges him. Because
Hellboy's royalty. Because only royalty can challenge.
Royalty. And to remind us, there's a pretty cool scene where they put on at the beginning of the movie, they put on the goggles where you can see Fairyland. And you see momentarily Hellboy with his horns and his
fire crown,
his flaming crown, which is kind of it's a really cool moment. So Hellboy gets to challenge Nuada for the crown,
mm-hmm.
which means another fight amongst the gears. And
the Golden Army has stopped fighting.
Yeah,
they're just kind of chilling. They're
just hanging out, watching because a challenge has been laid down, and Hellboy gets the upper hand, but. Nuada is about to stab Hellboy in the back.
And Nuala stabs herself.
Nuala stabs herself.
Just knock yourself out.
Out.
Just throw yourself against the wall.
Say, Abe, just hit me as hard as you can. I'm a fairy. Just knock me out. It'll knock out my brother. No, she kills herself for the sake of
Hellboy.
I guess she dies in Abe Sapien's arms and turns to stone.
But first they touch hands and he's like, I never got a chance to tell you how I feel. And she's like, it's beautiful. And there's a cool scene in the beginning where before they get drunk, but near the time they get drunk, where Abe goes, I can't cry or smile physically. I don't think I have tear ducts, but he cries and it's cute and sad.
And Nuada dies and turns to stone, but his stone crumbles because, as you said,
he's unworthy of being stone.
He's not worthy of being a stone statue man. And she dies, as I said when we first watched it. Fortunately, she died not holding Abe's arm or anything, or else he would have had to have broken off his girlfriend's hand in order to get out.
But his hand was obviously in her hand.
I know. When maybe she was like, oh, I'm dying, hold on, and opened her hand up because she's like, can't do that. I've seen that happen too many times in Fairyland. They leave their little underground lair. Manning has arrived.
No, you forgot the part where they burn the crown.
Oh, yeah, they hand the crown to Liz, and
who
she
just
melts
sets
it
on fire.
She just melts it. She's like, oh, yeah, done. There's your plot. Gone. Could have just melted the crown about 15 minutes ago. Wouldn't have had any of this had to happen.
Okay. To defend them,
yes.
They thought that they were going... They didn't know Abe had the crown.
No, they didn't.
And they thought they were going to have to give the crown to save Hellboy.
Again, Hellboy has now been saved at this point.
But Abe still thinks he has to give the crown piece to save his girlfriend.
I don't understand.
I don't know.
We know it in any case. They go back up to the surface. Manning is there. He's tracked them down. They all quit their jobs with the BPRD because they don't like Manning. There's a similar thing. So in the comic, there is a great character in the comic named Roger. He's a homunculus who is discovered in a lab.
What is that?
He is a man made of clay.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets brought to life by Liz. He steals her fire and almost kills her. And he does kill another agent, but only because he's sort of like lashing out. He doesn't know what's going on. He's a man just made entirely of mud. he gets brought on as a BPRD agent, but they plant a bomb inside him. The heads of BPRD put a bomb in his head. In case he goes crazy again, they can blow him up. Hellboy finds out about this, realizes... We've already seen a flashback where Hellboy had to stop the original BPRD from dissecting Abe. He saved Abe. He saves Roger. He gets the bomb out of Roger. And then he quits. And that's when Hellboy leaves the BPRD. He's like, I'm done. How's long before you put a bomb in my head? Is basically his question. They sort of try to play it off the same way in this movie, which is like, you don't see us as anything other than monsters, so we don't want to work for you anymore. But there's enough else going on in the movie that kind of gets lost. So when they all quit, it's kind of like, wait, what's going on? Like, why are you quitting your jobs? And then they're walking off. And that's when Hellboy's like, we got to talk about this baby.
Big house sky for this, good for the baby. And Liz goes, babies.
And he's like, what? And she goes, she holds up two fingers, two.
And we don't know how she knows.
Credits roll. Like, that's the end of our movie. It leaves it on this like cliffhanger. Like, there's so many unresolved issues. There is a animated comic included with the DVD that sets up the third movie where Rasputin comes back and Cronin comes back. And we're going to see a resolution to this whole, will Hellboy destroy the world? How's that sequel coming?
It's not.
It's never going to happen. I have a lot of problems with this movie. I know a lot of people love this movie.
I like the movie. I have a lot of problems with it.
It's never worked for me. I like a lot of parts of it. I like some of the ideas. The plot doesn't hold together for me. I wish they'd focused more on I would have just loved to have seen a movie about Nuada and Nuala and the pack. Like, give that its own movie. Like, that would have been great. Hellboy 2 could have been about them discovering Roger the Homunculus. It could have been about the vampire who they have to deal with in the Hellboy comics. I understand that Del Toro wanted to go off in his own direction with this. And it's obvious that he's got his own plans for stories about, as you say, the world of Fae, which he begins exploring in future movies. It's obvious that Del Toro had ideas about this that he wanted to get down on film. I think they would have been better served personally with just a movie about this world. But obviously you can't.
Well, I mean, Trollhunters.
Well, yeah.
10 out of 10 IGN.
Yeah, I mean, eventually he does get properties where he's able to explore these worlds. Yeah. And I think that's great. Hellboy 2, I just don't know if it was the perfect fit.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Hellboy punching goblins.
No.
I want to see Hellboy fighting cosmic entities. I want to see him, like, struggling with his, like...
I'm a demon, but I'm human.
I'm the harbinger of the end. Like, that's a big deal. Like, in the comics, he goes into the underworld. He's dealing with, like, cosmic realities and having a lot of existential crises. And we get the character of Kate Corrigan, who is one of my favorite characters from the Hellboy universe. Kate Corrigan... who shows up in the two animated specials. Kate Corrigan, who is one of the heads of the BPRD eventually. And
I don't know who this is.
She is a woman. She's a woman. So we get another female character in there. She's older. She goes out on assignment with the gang. She's just a person, but she's super smart about folklore. And she kind of is Tom Manning-ish in that she can't deal with these creatures, but she's so sympathetic and so lovely a person that I just love reading about her. And she has her own issues. It's just she's an older woman in this world of monsters who is just trying to keep things together, and a lot of BPRD falls on her shoulders. She's a wonderful character. Kate is just one of my favorites. She's in the animated films. She's a great character. I wish they'd brought her in. I wish they'd brought in Roger. I wish they'd brought in
Roger the Mudman.
He's such a funny character, and he's not a child. He's an adult, but he's optimistic. Like, he's the one character who's just the eternal, like, no, things are gonna go well. Like, this will all work out. Don't worry. And you get to see him kind of like disillusioned throughout the comics, which is sad. But it's character growth. You can see real character growth. But But don't think that I'm trying to like bad on it. I'm not trying to bad on Hellboy 2. I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yum with it. If you love Hellboy 2, love it. Like, love it. Love Hellboy 2.
I do.
Yeah, like, go for it. That's great. I love that people love it. I love that it's...
I just wanted the universe to be explored more.
Well, we will get to explore more of Del Toro's inner universe as we go along. I think it's worth owning. I think it's a great movie to have. I think it's worth exploring. It's beautiful in places. Beautiful cinematography. Those wacky creatures. Mm-hmm. Can't get enough of them. I would have loved a whole movie of just the troll market. Or there's these stupid novels that came out of Star Wars novels, like Tales of Jabba's Palace. I would have loved the Tales of the Troll Market. Like, let's just get a bunch of adventures. Get different sci-fi writers to write about these characters.
Or like fantasy writers.
Well, fantasy writers, yeah. Like, get them. Like, where's that novel? Or did it come out? I don't think it did. There was an art book that came out by Del Toro and Mike Mignola, that if you can get your hands on it, I don't know if you can find a used copy of it somewhere, definitely worth checking out. It's got great interviews, stories about the making of the movie, great art, production art.
Like my Alien book?
Yes. Like, these are things worth getting. This is one of those movies that I tracked its entire production. Like, stills were released. I was totally into this. But I was a little let down by it. And I still am a little let down by it. I don't blame Del Toro. I don't blame any of the production staff. It just didn't gel for me.
But that's understandable. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie. There were a lot of things wrong with it. But all together, it was really good. I liked the universe. I liked Princess Nuala. She was very cute. I liked Abe. I really liked Abe in this one. He seemed more of a like character in this one than just a book.
Yeah.
I liked Liz. Liz was good in it. I liked Hellboy. I liked Ron Perlman. Always like Ron Perlman.
I firmly agree with you on all of those points. Like, I think the movie's a little less than some of its parts, but the parts are all great. Like, there's a lot of great parts.
Liz has a new haircut, which is cute.
It is a cute haircut. Is a cute haircut. And some of Blair said like that Liz isn't in this movie is not Liz from the first movie. She's more sure of herself. She has wants and needs, and she's angrily pursuing them. Girl power. Girl power. Now we are about to enter a weird period in Del Toro's career. Mm-hmm. The next movie he makes after this is Pacific Rim, and that's a few years later. In between now and Pacific Rim, we get Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, screenplay mm-hmm. by him, which we will go into next time.
Yeah.
We get his abandoned Hobbit project. He was originally slated to direct the Hobbit movies in two parts. He left that project and it went to Peter Jackson, throwing the whole thing into turmoil. I don't blame Del Toro. It wasn't his project. I do want to talk a little bit about that. Maybe I'll dig up some info on like his abandoned.
I don't like the Hobbit movies.
Yeah.
At all.
I don't think most people do. They fell apart. We get into his abandoned At the Mountains of Madness project, which never happened.
I'm sad.
Yeah, and we don't know if it ever will happen. He starts going off. We're going to get into The Strain. We're going to get into his TV projects, more production work. We're entering a weird Del Toro time. Which it's, I don't know. But first, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to watch it with you. I didn't like it the first time I watched it.
You mean literally every movie that Del Toro has done?
No, I love all Del Toro movies. I've loved all of those movies the first time I watched it, except Hellboy 2.
And this one.
That's what I said, except Hellboy 2.
And Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which isn't his movie. I went in expecting a Del Toro movie. What I got was a Troy Nixie movie. I wasn't expecting it. I rewatched it recently and was like, this is a dang fine movie because I think it's a misunderstood classic. So
I hope I like it.
I hope you do, or else I'm gonna be like, but I like the movie. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a brutal little film.
Oh great.
But also it's got a child protagonist. So we'll get back into that. And
fairies.
Katie Holmes, who is a little bit from the world of fairy herself. So join us, won't you, for Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. It's going to be a special episode. It's not a good way to end the show. But again, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And we'll see you next time when it's...
You did the it's again.
We'll see you next time when...
It's Del Toro time.